Are you watching Grey's Anatomy without me?
It's only Tuesday.
Yeah, but we're catching up. What? And I got into it after the hospital shooting episode.
What do you want?
Spoilers.
Oh, sorry, dude.
Hey there, welcome to The Horrible Show, the ultimate video game podcast for HorribleNight.com. I'm your host and editor-in-chief, Justin Lacey. It's Wednesday, March 7th, 2012. Tonight's topic is the Louisville Arcade Expo. A group of us recently went down to the expo, and we're going to be talking about our experiences there and trying to give you some insight as to how those events run and who should attend. And joining me this evening are Cole Monroe.
What's going on?
Hello, hello, sir.
I need to get back to Mass Effect 3 so I can hurry this up.
Yeah, we record mainly on Tuesday nights. Watch this fourth wall completely fall down. So the most the most common occurrence that we our most common hurdle every week recording our new releases, and we're running up against the Mass Effect 3 release. And Cole's actually put a little bit of time into the intro, but it sounds like you haven't gotten any further than what's in the demo. Is that right?
Oh no, I went to a different planet already and won that mission. So
spoilers: there are multiple planets in Mass Effect 3.
Thanks a lot, Cole.
You're welcome. No, but I went to three different places today to try to get the collector's edition because I'm an idiot and don't pre-order anything.
In your defense, they were sold out. They were sold out like 3 weeks ago of the collector's editions online, and I was doing the same thing tonight. So you're not an idiot, or we're both idiots. One of the two.
Yeah, I think we're both idiots.
Also joining us, and soon to be the face of the Louisville Arcade Expo Horrible Night coverage, at least, Ethan Moses.
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, I was gonna say I don't know if I'd say that. I don't know if they want this face doing any sort of promoting, but you know, I get the job done via Horrible Night. You know, bar's not so high with you guys.
Yeah, you were kind of the guy that stepped in front of the camera, and that we just kind of ran with it from that point.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah, at first, yeah, I think you were hosting, and then I just suddenly just grabbed hold of the tiny little microphone and thought I'd do it. So seems to work out well. I made a lot of friends, maybe.
I think I would have tried to host if we would have had a larger microphone. I was just uncomfortable holding that little thing.
I think that added a little humor to the whole thing, since we lost the clip on our lav mic and Ethan had to Bob Barker that shit.
It was, yeah.
I kept thinking we should have like duct tape a straw to it or something to make it. These are the great ideas I have after the fact.
Right.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, we were trying to appear as professional as possible, but it would be pretty tough if we had a makeshift straw microphone to interview people with.
Back to you, Ethan.
Wink. Well, we're gonna get rolling tonight with game industry shoutouts, where we tackle a headline that has had our attention the past week, and then some horrible shoutouts where we recap any of the original articles by other authors on our website, and then our on-the-spot community question coming from our listeners by emailing ask@horriblenight.com. We will feature your question. Then we'll talk about the Louisville Arcade Expo and our experiences there, and wrap up the show with horriblenight.com updates. So let's get rolling with game industry shoutouts. Ethan, you'll kick us off.
I hate to always have the same headline, especially within 2 months, but the XCOM Enemy Unknown trailer came out this week, and it actually showed some gameplay, and I've got to say that I'm pretty damn excited for that game. This does not take away any sort of excitement from Xenonauts, because I think Xenonauts is going for a more classic XCOM feel, but the work they've done with XCOM Enemy Unknown is pretty amazing. It was an awesome trailer. The ant farm kind of approach to the base building was incredible to see. It was shocking because I wasn't expecting it to be that in-depth. I was really thinking that, you know, this game was going to kind of shave off some of those elements. Looks like it's doing exactly what it needs to do to kind of reintroduce itself to this generation of gamers. And actually, as I was watching this trailer, I was pretty excited because I just imagine I'm going to have Xenonauts, which is basically the classic approach to XCOM. I'm going to have XCOM Enemy Unknown, which is kind of, you know, the newfangled approach to it. And then I'm going to have XCOM, the first-person shooter, which, you know...
It's called XCOM.
Which is just called XCOM, yep. Which, I'm interested in, but I'm not going to buy into it quite yet. So I've got essentially three tactical alien-themed games to choose from, and I can't imagine that all three of them will be bad, so I know I can fall back on at least one of them. And I think I think for people that have never played XCOM, even if you're not a fan, this is huge for that game. I mean, it's just that style of game, and I also recently saw Mech Assault, the kind of a strategy game that's kind of using the hexagonal planes and stuff like that. So I think turn-based strategy is kind of emerging more so as a legitimate contender for, you know, a mainstream genre, and I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, I like how you're playing the odds with your genres now. It's just like, it sounds like you're going safely into genres where, oh, they've got multiple games in here. At least one of them would be good. So between this and I think the 19 mech games that are coming out, I think if you just stay within those genres, you're at least going to get two decent games.
Oh yeah, I can't go wrong with it. But I kind of, looking back, you know, and I'm sure the podcast that we talked about, Enemy Unknown, I've kind of ranted more than likely a little bit about my reservations about the game, and I just want to retract any of those statements. Nice. I react pretty quickly, but I'm also willing to admit when I'm wrong, and I'm definitely going to admit that I was wrong in terms of that, and I'm actually really, really pumped up for it. So. Within the release of that, I'm more than likely not going to be on the podcast that evening if it happens to be released on a Tuesday.
Thanks for the warning. At least we won't have to blame Red Alert 3.
Yeah, no, not this time.
I'm kind of glad you're rethinking this, but I'm kind of curious because XCOM Enemy Unknown did not get as decent of a reception as I thought, especially coming off of all the hate towards the first-person shooter. But I wonder if this would have been better received if Xenonauts wasn't out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the thing with the FP with first-person shooters, people could... I think it was easier to be mad about that and then just kind of ignore it because it was a first-person shooter. It wasn't in the same genre. I think with this one, I think this is when the real XCOM nitpicking is going to come out because, again, they're trying to... it's a reimagining. So again, it's not like with the first person shooter where, I mean, they've they've eliminated a lot of that some of those tactical elements to it. With this, people are going to come in there and start kind of picking away at things. And I think that we talked about this a little bit, that the aspects of the game that they're going to remove or streamline will make the game more palatable to a larger audience, but I don't think that they're going to lose their identity in doing that. I don't think it's a bad thing for people to be exposed to this kind of game.
Gotcha. I think we need to kind of triple up our coverage of these games and basically come up with a team of three and find somebody that's biased towards each of the games individually. So, you know, I could come in and as like first-person shooter guy and relate the other two games, and then, you know, we'll find the Xenonauts fan or the Enemy Unknown fan and see what the threesome actually thinks about all three games. But the chances of finding three staff members from HorribleNight.com that will finish the same three games, I think that'll be our biggest hurdle.
Oh, yeah. Finish? Oh, yeah. No, yeah, definitely.
All right, Coleman, what's your shout out?
You sent me a link over the Twitter today.
The tweets.
After I had mentioned that I had just got Mass Effect 3. And you said, no, you should be probably getting this game. And on Thursday, Punch-Out for the 3DS eShop is released. So I will be hand cramping like crazy when that game comes out. my hands hurt bad enough on a regular Nintendo controller, let alone a little 3DS. But actually, there's a decent amount of games coming out for that system here this week and in the following week. Like I said, Punch-Out's coming out, and then some Game Gear games are coming out.
Oh, nice.
Like Shinobi, Sonic Triple Trouble, I don't know what that is, and Dragon Crystal. So, yeah, get some Game Gear on. And actually, I went to Target today to buy Mass Effect 3, and I had hands-on with a Vita. And that thing is really light. I was surprised how light it was.
It's
pretty handsy today, Cole.
I was. Handsy right now. Yeah, I'll have all about the hands.
Vita's it's a nice piece of hardware.
It is. The screen was really awesome.
It feels pretty nice. It's just a shame that there's nothing to play on it, and it's so damn expensive and difficult to use as far as storage goes. And I've not heard good things about the UI, but. But
I tried to load up Uncharted and it was taking forever, so I just bounced.
But I am excited about these Game Gear games. I think Nintendo and Sega have really kind of missed the mark on kind of cross promoting each other's stuff. Like as far as just there are still a lot of Nintendo people that grew up around Nintendo that did not experience a majority of Sega games, and I am finding myself much more drawn to the eShops lately for playing older games and open up those Sega libraries. That makes a lot of sense on those devices.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I wonder if there's a little bit of tension still between Sega and Nintendo. You know what I mean? Like, it's been a while.
Sure.
But back in the day, man, there was some competition there. And I know that there's a lot of below the surface, tension between old school Nintendo fans and old school Sega fans. I mean, I hate Nintendo fans. Like, I literally hate them. Like, when I see people, what?
When we were having our Nintendo Power conversation,
yeah,
you pointed out that Sonic was on the cover, and I went back and counted. He's been on the cover like 7 times. So I don't think Sonic could be on the cover of Nintendo Power, I don't think there's any tension there anymore.
But do you think there's one or two guys on both sides that remember the days, you know, like kind of like they remember, they know what was going on, you know, and they don't like them. But they kind of keep it to themselves because they don't want to lose their jobs. I just imagine these really old guys just sitting there just pissed.
And they're in their Nintendo T-shirts.
Yeah. Hey, did they mention Columns? Is Columns going to be coming out?
No, but I did hear that Lumines is the best game on the Vita.
Yeah, it's basically Columns, isn't it?
Kind of.
Yep. I'd get a Vita if my hands weren't so strong. I mean, Cole was talking about hands, but I've got really strong hands. I can crush walnuts in my hands. I feel like I'd crush the Vita. That's why I don't play mobile games.
That'd be an expensive crush factor.
Mm-hmm. But it'd look cool. We can make a YouTube video. Go viral.
Hey, I hear things on YouTube go viral.
All the time.
It's so easy. Just put it up there. So for my industry shout out, I just wanted to say, is on iPhone now. It's a base jumping simulator. It's a base jumping game. But it was an indie game that was a hit a while back on, I think, just downloadable on PC. But it plays really well on the iPhone, as far as it uses kind of the gyroscope to your first person falling through off of a really tall futuristic building, and so you're trying to dodge, like you're trying to see how far you can fall or fall all the way to the ground without hitting anything. But you also get points for hanging out close to a building, or just touching a building, but not like touching a walkway that would kill you because you would stop. So, it's a very interesting concept, and I actually didn't know that they were going to use the motion controls to control that, but it works really well. I'm sure I would probably say it would be better on an iPad or a larger screen. But it was a pretty cool pickup for just a couple bucks.
See, not hitting things as you fall takes away the drama. I mean, you want to get hit and then like rotate. You know what I mean?
No,
that's dramatic. That's cool.
Well, they up the drama by giving you like gates to try to fall through that are in, tough tough areas to get to. Like, you have to go close to that crosswalk to get to that next gate, and then you can't just fall straight. It doesn't work that way.
So we're not talking about movie death scenes?
No.
That'd be a cool game, though.
I think
to see how many things you could hit as you fell and yelled and shot a gun back up at the protagonist.
It's kind of hard. What's that PSN game? Pain?
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me of that. Yeah. Where you slingshot the guy. I think that's more in that realm, but this is... it's a falling simulator. I thought it was kind of novel.
Yeah, I like how you said base jumping. Is base jumping or falling? What is the difference?
Well, I guess that is kind of base jumping, but I've never base jumped before. I've only base jumped in like Saints Row and Just Cause 2. But I don't think base jumpers like fall through certain areas to get points. So I think that part of the simulation is a little bit exaggerated.
Oh. You don't think it'd be fun just to have a base jumping simulator? I like doing it on Saints Row 3. Which has kind of a little
I don't know if you could make it better than that. That'd be the tough point.
No, maybe with the grappling hook.
This one succeeds because it's, you know, it doesn't cost very much money. It's first person, and it's just easy to pick up and play. So
yeah, it did look cool. Definitely look cool. It's on Steam too, isn't it?
Yes. I think it was out there first, so it just made the jump to mobile devices. So
good jump. Jump.
How about some horrible shout-outs? Cole, what had your attention on our site?
Well, we were just talking about some Sega and Nintendo wars back in the day, and Mr. Gifford wrote about how he has no Nintendo gaming roots because he was a Sega guy, and he's never finished a lot of classic Nintendo games. So it's a really good article. It just talks about how he's... started with the Commodore 64 and went to the PC, and that was his kind of early generation, and then moving on to the Genesis. So I just can't trust a guy who's never played Nintendo games. So, Ethan, I don't trust you either.
Wait a minute. Multi-platform child. AKA better than most people. You know, the funny thing is, you realize that we live in a world right now, this day and age, that there are kids that will be born playing video games that will never play a Nintendo platform. Does that shock you?
No, I mean, that guy that we met at the expo didn't own an NES, and he won a contest of sorts. And so that was kind of weird. Like, he was obviously a younger guy than us, and that was kind of strange to...
It's definitely not as strange as running into someone our age or around our age that hasn't. Like, I kind of, you know, Nintendo, you know, went through their down periods, and I don't blame a kid for not starting out with a GameCube. You know what I mean? It's not quite the same era. So
no, I understand, but like never owning an NES, it's just
weird.
It's just weird, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, you know, that's... It's almost like walking. That's like kids going from crawling and being babies to just running real quick. You know? like, oh, my first system was an Xbox 360, and that was how many
generations
between that and Nintendo? I mean, it's nuts. Like, we're old. I guess what I'm trying to say is we're old.
We're old, and we were slow babies.
We were really slow babies.
No, I thought it was kind of interesting, too, that a lot of the games that Gifford pointed out in this article that he doesn't have, you know, the base experience with they were also non-Nintendo games. They were third-party games like Castlevania and the Mega Man series. And sometimes I forget, you know, it's not all about, you know, Mario. So that was kind of interesting. And I'm just glad he's a well-adjusted adult at this point. I don't really know.
How well-adjusted do you think he is?
Ethan, what's your horrible shout out?
I actually enjoyed your article about the games of shame. Let me explain. Just kind of highlighting some of
these. Please explain.
You want me to explain? I'll go ahead. Yeah, you know, you, Justin Lacey, I think you know this, highlighted some of those sequences and games that should a person randomly walk in, may be a bit embarrassing, maybe a bit shocking. And you know, I just, it was funny because, I read that, and just maybe 2 weeks before I was, playing Saints Row 3, and there was like a police car coming at me, and Aubrey walked in the room to tell me something, and I shot up the rocket and just, I mean, it just exploded, and it was great, and I was smiling. And so for her to walk in and see me smiling and see the, you know, those that have been, you know, put on the planet to protect us in a, you know, a wash of flame, it was a little bit odd. And I had to kind of say, look, no, these were bad police officers, which whether or not that was true, I'm not sure. but it was just, you know, one of those things. But I haven't run into the situation where it was more of a sexy thing. You know what I mean? It's you know, like, oh, these characters are about to do it, because I can't think of another game. I haven't got to that scene in Mass Effect. You know, I can't think of another game where I had that option of having a love interest, you know, outside of Skyrim, which there's not really a whole lot of sex to that.
You never banged any hookers in Grand Theft Auto?
I didn't. I respected them because I knew, you know what, they came from bad childhoods, and I'm not going to take advantage of that.
No, that Mass Effect scene was actually the one that spurred the article, just because I've been trying to figure out. I was getting near the scene, and so my kind of living room situation, most nights is that, you know, I'll be playing the game, and like I said in the article, I'm really aware when the kids are running around. I'm not even playing anything near this when the kids are, you know, awake or running around. But a lot of times my girlfriend will fall asleep, and I'll play for, you know, an hour or so after she falls asleep in the living room, and then but she'll wake up, you know, mid movie or mid video game, which can be very confusing for anyone. And I just kept having this scenario play over in my head that it's just she's gonna wake up right in the middle of the sex scene. Like I was kind of ready for that moment. So and I was like, well, how do I talk myself out of this one? And then I started thinking back to the other situations.
You know, and when I read that, I realized that maybe what you do is you just don't react. Maybe if you don't react and people just think, oh, wow, it's not that big of a deal. Like when I react to things, people kind of, it calls more attention to it. So, you know, sometimes when I watch pornography and someone walks in on me, I turn to them, I say, hey, how's it going? How are you? And that just shuts it down right there.
Maybe. I can't react that way. Mine's always like, I want the person to understand, but it's just like, they don't have the context to understand it. So it kind of, and I mean, the other thing I wanted to say was that I wasn't trying to point out any of these scenes as being negative. I've enjoyed every scene from, that I mentioned in the article, but, if you can't acknowledge that this is a pretty awkward and humorous situation to walk in on with somebody not having any context of what you're playing, I thought it was somewhat humorous. So my shout out, I guess no love for Cole, but Ethan, you're
here we go.
You're damn you, Deus Ex. Damn you, Deus Ex Human Revolution article. It just kind of caught me off guard because I didn't know when you tend to write a gaming cynic article, I didn't know how harsh it was going to be. And usually you'll layer in you know, some layers of humor, but this one had me kind of laughing out loud by the end of it, just picturing you trying to reenact your favorite spy sequences by crawling through vents in your home and not fitting in them. So
yeah.
Very, very good visual gags.
Well, yeah, that I was actually trying to, I figured, you know, if I'm going to write about this, I need to illustrate it. So I was trying to figure out a way to set up a camera and climb into my vent. And I realized that was just going to be a really bad idea, and it would be too set up, you know? I didn't want to set it up like that. I wanted people to understand the natural approach to climbing in vents, and I actually searched person stuck in vent, and amazingly, that wasn't the only picture that popped up, which makes me believe that there are more people like me out in this world, and that's scary. But also kind of cool, because maybe we could all join together and practice our spy skills and finally live out the lives that we really want to.
Yeah, I think this was a bigger incident around like the release of Metal Gear Solid 1. People hiding in boxes and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, you got to be careful, because I actually heard about people hiding in piles of leaves and getting run over. And, I always like to be sneaky. And I like to, you know, again, I mentioned the article, I like to sneak up and scare my wife. But then, and I forget who was telling me about this. Maybe it was my mom or my dad or someone, and they were telling me about all these situations where sneaking around actually went horribly wrong for somebody. And so since then, I've kind of backed off the sneaking and scaring because, you know, one, I could get injured, but two, I would feel really bad if I jumped out of a vent and my wife, like, fell down the stairs. Like,
yeah.
That takes the humor right out of it. So, you know, maybe this that article kind of helped me a little bit grow as a human.
I'm glad you got something out of it.
Yeah.
Moving on to our on-the-spot question. This is our weekly segment where you, the listener, can submit your own questions to The Horrible Show and to our various podcasts just by emailing us at ask@horriblenight.com or hitting us up on our contact form on the site or also on Twitter at Horrible Night. And this question is pretty direct. It comes from Tony Comforti via the internet. So Assassin's Creed 3, all the rumors were true. Assassin's Creed 3 will be set in during the American Revolution, and they released a trailer revealing the new assassin, Connor, and some name I also known as a name that I can't pronounce. And so what'd you guys...
So racist.
The name has a colon in it.
I know, and an apostrophe in places.
Oh, so he's French?
Yeah, he's French. I was hoping for a French Revolution Assassin's Creed 3, but they went American, of course.
Yeah, so yeah.
I didn't watch the trailer, so I have no idea what it's about. I just know, like,
well,
Revolution.
The trailer basically broke down some of the gameplay that it focused a lot on traversal through the wilderness and kind of jumping between trees. And because I guess a lot of the game, this is also coming from reading up on some of the details behind the game, but the characters, I believe, half colonist and half Native American, and the game's going to take place in New York and Boston, but a majority of it's going to be out in the wilderness. It's going to have a really big map in the wilderness and kind of survival tactics out there. Focused a lot on, I'm very excited about the tomahawk as a weapon. But yeah, what was your guys' general reaction to the announcement of the setting?
Well, I think it made me... I haven't played many of the other games. I actually started with one. I really didn't like it, so I never got past that to play the other titles, and I really didn't want to have to catch up too much on the story. But this actually looks like a game I would play. It's not that I don't like kind of the medieval, you know, Renaissance period, but there's nothing about it that really interests me all that much. And the American Revolution, I do enjoy. I love America. Sorry, friend, but I do. And, you know, the idea that, you know, this character is you know, part Native American is pretty cool because I think that I'm 1/32nd Cherokee. I think I did a family tree, and I think that one of my ancestors was a strong, agile Cherokee warrior. And it's good to see my people being represented in this in games more so than just, you know, the bad guys and Red Dead Redemption or one of those games.
Actually, I doubt your math, but you're probably more Cherokee than you're probably giving yourself credit for if you actually charted that out.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not very good at math.
Cole, what'd you think?
I mean, for me, I think the setting is really cool and interesting take on it. How to move the Assassin's Creed series in a different direction. I know me personally, like, I love the second one and Brotherhood. Is that the next one?
Yep.
Yeah. And
2-2.
I think that for me, it was weighed down by just all the different things you can do in the game. I'd like to see a more streamlined Assassin's Creed where sure. It's just like going through the story and not having all this side bullshit to do. Cause that stuff I always found myself getting weighed down by that and not wanting to move forward. So, it seems like if you're in the woods all the time, you're not going to be able to buy a house or, you know, update a town.
You
know,
you could build one.
Yeah, I guess you could build a log cabin. Or you could have a teepee or something.
But. The whole middle portion where you're building a log cabin.
But yeah, I think the guerrilla fighting aspect of it is fits right with the assassins.
There weren't any gorillas in America.
You're right.
With an E, gorilla with an E. I know. I'm just kidding.
I've actually found myself really strangely defensive of this game, especially for someone that kind of dismissed Revelations. I'm sure leading up to 3, I will play Revelations just to kind of finish Ezio's story. But I was a big fan of 2 and Brotherhood and the Italy setting. I just thought they captured that culture really, really well, and it's a really interesting character. But I know a lot of people were coming up with their own ideas for where Assassin's Creed 3 should be set, and there's just a lot of negativity, surprising amount of negativity that I noticed when these rumors were coming about and then confirmed. And I think that the American Revolution is a great place to kind of start over, because I'm with you, Cole. I hope they don't kind of bloat it out like Revelations tended to go a little bit too far. I kind of enjoyed the balance of Brotherhood, but if you're going to start over with a new assassin, I would like it to be more of a solo oriented story, and rather than building, your crew of assassins. And I think this kind of wilderness setting kind of lends itself to that. So, I think, why you kind of mentioned you were thinking more of maybe the French Revolution.
That was just a joke.
Okay. but no, a lot of people have kind of argued for other places kind of in Europe or Asia as ideas. But I feel like this is a very different story than what Assassin's Creed 1 and 2 have captured. And I think that's important to kind of keep my interest in the series. I think they have to change things up and center the gameplay around one assassin, but change everything else up. And I think there's a lot of room to kind of play for them around this story.
Well, and this, it looks like now, I believe Josh Lee has said that he doesn't want to play another one until he's in a modern setting with Desmond. And it looks like we're making our way slowly but surely in that direction. So what? So we've got the American Revolution, probably do the maybe Civil War at some point, World War II. And then we're back into the World War II shooters. And I think that's when Assassin's Creed will become a first-person shooter. Finally. But
the thing is, this series is playing with time. They can go anywhere. They could go stupid with it and add another layer that you're somebody else that plays as Desmond, that plays as all these assassins.
It doesn't mean that. And they could go back to the
past, could be master. Too. This could be Master Chief out there,
right? Actually. And it doesn't mean like just because they've gone forward in time the last 5 games, they could go back to Egypt or something, and you could be a Pharaoh assassin.
Yeah,
who knows?
I mean, people were getting everybody was getting wrapped up in making these predictions about these games from a series that has turned into a yearly franchise, surprisingly. But it just seemed like they thought this decision was so final. I mean, the Assassin's Creed series isn't going anywhere. Revelations sold really well, and I there's going to be plenty of time for them to take divergent paths, and it was just, it just really caught me off guard for some reason.
Well, you know that this is a Black Ops prequel, right? You guys know that? Would that make people mad to know that this leads to Call of Duty? Yeah.
Oh man, if Activision bought Ubisoft and actually did that, that'd be kind of funny.
So, or they could go. Never mind. That's not gonna work.
That would be the ultimate evil tactic of Activision. They start buying up other publishers and taking their main franchises and merging them with Call of Duty.
I like it. I'd like it.
All right, that's going to do it for the on-spot question. Again, we take questions every week. Just send us emails at ask@horriblenight.com, and if we choose your question, we will give you a shout-out on the show. All right, fellas, the Louisville Arcade Expo was this past weekend, and Cole, you sent us an email to kick off last week. So we didn't really, I'd like to say that we prepared or over-prepared for this expo, but really, we didn't know much about it going into it, and we're just excited to attend. So what got you guys interested in the Arcade Expo?
Well, I got an email from a coworker who's into video games, and she knew that we had the site, and she's she threw an invite out there for everybody that we worked with to see if they wanted to go, because she had gone last year, I guess. And I hadn't even heard of it at all. And I didn't see any signs around town or anything like that. So I was kind of like shocked and was like, okay, I need to immediately send this to the guys and see if they want to come down for it. Because I got really excited. Like,
which parts?
I was more excited about the pinball and the arcade machines because you don't get an opportunity to play those often anymore. The console games, I wasn't that interested in, because if I wanted to play those games, I had the means to do that. So, but I was really excited about the pinball more than even the arcade game.
Cool. Ethan, what got you excited?
I mean, it's pretty easy to get me excited about most anything. So Cole probably forwarded this email on to us, and I read it at the perfect time as my coffee and oatmeal combined within my belly to create some sort of a chemical reaction to just really, you know, throw my excitement to the next level, which for me is huge. That's gigantic. Next level excitement, big. You know, I miss arcades. It makes me sad every time I'm at the local mall here in Indianapolis and I kind of walk upstairs and peek in, and it's like a ghost town. You know, it's just not the same. And arcades were a huge part of my upbringing because I wasn't very good at baseball, and my dad, was a baseball coach, and I needed to play arcade games because I was really bad at hitting the ball and so bad that, I said, "Hey, Dad, I don't know if I'm going to play baseball anymore." And instead of being, "No, you got to stick with it," he was like, "You know, that's okay. I respect that decision." So, that was a complete made up story. I went to timeout. Is that right? Timeout was our arcade in Columbus. Actually, all of us have been there. I had a babysitter during the summer, and he would take us down and we would get tokens. Back when tokens were like freaking gold, and as far as I'm concerned, they were made of gold, and we just played the hell out of arcade games. It was always really crowded, and for some reason, despite having the consoles at home, it was just better. It was just better to be in an arcade, and there's all kinds of cool stuff going on, and overstimulating at times. But I mean, those were some good, solid times, and that's like a huge summertime memory. And I really want to relive that because we don't always have those opportunities to do so. It's one thing to play the actual upright arcade machines, that compared to, you know, just downloading a game that we used to play in the arcades, because it doesn't have that same feel. You know, that whole idea that there are billions of germs on the joysticks, and every time you touch it, it's like playing Russian roulette with your own health. I miss that. I miss the tension that creates.
Yeah, I was kind of with Cole. I was most excited about the pinball games just because I didn't play very many of them as a kid, and in my kind of arcade game research of wanting to buy my own games, I dug a little bit further into what it takes to upkeep pinball machines, and I got really interested in a lot of pinball games that I didn't know existed, and I was just anxious to see what they would have. And that was the other side of it, was just I just thought it was awesome that Louisville was hosting an arcade expo, that it was this close to us, just because, you know, the Midwest doesn't really host too many, at least going into this, I didn't think too many gamer-centric types of events. And so I was just like excited to see what they could pull off, and I know they'd done this for a few years, so I was just ready to walk through those doors. So so we showed up Saturday at the Ramada, and they basically had overtaken the convention center attached to the hotel. And what was kind of your guys' reactions walking up? Was it kind of what you expected, or you still weren't sure what was going on?
You know, the thing that I was kind of trying to figure out in my head is how big this was going to be. Mm-hmm. We went as fans foremost. We also went because we kind of wanted to cover it, do some interviews, do that kind of stuff. So to me, it was a little bit intimidating because walking up, I didn't know if there was going to be a ton of people and we were going to have to like fight our way to, you know, talk to the people that we wanted to talk to. We got there and it was really comfortable, I think, walking in. It wasn't too big. It wasn't too small. I think we got there at a perfect time. It was pretty discreet, though. I mean, you wouldn't know that something like that was going on unless you were, you know, within 100 yards of it. So I think that kind of lends itself to how arcades kind of were, because a lot of the time in a mall, I mean, they were just kind of tucked away, you know, so it wasn't like you could see it from outside, you know. And if you look at Circle Center today, I mean, it's up on the very top floor. So I kind of like that. I don't know. It's kind of like a little mystery spot, you know. And you walked in, it was like this treasure trove of arcade machines and pinball machines. And I really like that. And it was set up really, really well, really professionally. And it was low key, which was cool.
Yeah, I didn't expect it to be as organized as it was. They had all the pinball machines on in one area, then arcade, and then consoles and the computer games and stuff. And how they had the settings set up for all the tournaments and different games. So they had like the Mortal Kombat tournament, Dr. Mario tournament, Duck Hunt, all that stuff. So I was really impressed with just how professional it was, like Ethan had said. Especially walking into the building, you're just like, is this where it is? Because there's no signage or anything. It's just kind of a discreet building and kind of outside of town. It wasn't like it was downtown Louisville or anything. I was just really impressed with the professionalism and didn't really expect that, I guess.
Yeah, I was also kind of impressed by we met with the organizers of the event, mainly Jeremy was our kind of initial point of contact there. But I was also kind of struck by their passion for the event itself and for gaming. And Jeremy actually is a pinball guy, and I've never met a pinball guy before. but there was a lot of the kind of instant camaraderie, even if, you know, our interests were a little bit varied. But it was really comfortable. And it's something this entire time I compare this to the Penny Arcade Expo, which I've been to twice, but is a much larger affair. But at the same time, the whole atmosphere of just everybody's welcome, and there were a lot of families walking around, which was really neat. And but also like just about every game you could think of, and that's kind of what I want to get into next. Let's talk about the games we played, the games we saw, and what kind of got you excited. Let's just kind of go one at a time here, but Ethan, what caught your attention first?
I think the thing that I kind of was drawn to the most was the Donkey Kong game.
Yeah,
because I watched The King of Kong and I really liked that, but I hadn't, looking back at my childhood, I'd never actually seen a Donkey Kong arcade machine. You know, that was just, I'd never seen that. And it was kind of cool because it was kind of like seeing, you know, like a monument on TV and then actually seeing it in real life. And that sounds really, really geeky, but I'm okay with that because it was like, oh, that's freaking Donkey Kong. And I played it, and I don't know how those guys played that game so well. I mean, I'm not saying that those machines are created badly. I'm just not used to that control scheme at all. Like, it was insane. I mean, I moved and it wasn't working out too well. And then in addition to that, we played, what did we play, Justin, you and I?
I kind of wanted to start on Donkey Kong just because you forget how, like, you know, King of Kong makes, when you're witnessing people breaking records in that game, it's one of the hardest games, like historically hardest games of all time. So it, you know, just timing barrel jumps in general, it takes a little bit of practice. So it's kind of funny just to kind of watch the resurgence of interest in that game itself, especially, you know, that the cabinet seemed to be an original cabinet, or at least the ones they've been featuring in the King of Kong. So it was pretty cool. There's kind of a mystique around that machine now, and that was kind of cool that it was amongst everything else.
Yeah. And then it was funny because we were waiting in line to play that game, and there was a little girl that was playing it in front of us, and she was, I mean, she had to have been five, six, something like that, and she was doing really well, you know. And I went in there, and I feel like I'm
she's doing really well
enough at gaming. Yeah, and I died pretty quickly. So games were tough back then. We forget that. Games were tough back then on consoles, but they were a lot tougher in the arcade.
But I also got a kick out of the fact, I don't know why, but it made me feel good when, Yeah, she was doing really well, but she also got really ticked off when she died.
Like, oh yeah,
I don't know. There was something timeless about that. Like that, and that's, I don't know. We had a few of those moments just witnessing the next generation playing some of our favorite games, and it was really cool. Like I said, seeing families and parents introducing these games to their kids. But I think the next game that you and I jumped into, Ethan, we played some Smash TV.
Smash TV, yeah. Dang it, I forgot about that. Yeah, that was, we had a good time. You weren't very good, though.
I sucked.
You weren't very good.
I was, I don't know, I think I found myself in that instance, I was more watching the game than playing the game. Like, I don't know, sometimes when you play old school games like that, I go through all of the memories of playing it previously, and it was like, I was just trying to, you know, oh, what does this power up do? Or how much money can I get? And not really paying attention to anything that else that was going on, and I died pretty quickly.
Did you guys play that before?
No.
Never? I mean, I played it.
Oh, that was a big grocery store game there for a while.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember playing it back in the day, but, you know, that's kind of to me, it was strange because all the machines were on free play, and so you didn't have as much of a, I don't know. I mean, it wasn't like you died and you were done. I mean, you could just jump right back in, you know. And so that it wasn't as tense. Yeah, yeah. I remember. You know, that was one thing that I got to say. I kind of missed, and not because, you know, it wasn't a bad thing that we got to play games for free as long as we wanted. But there was that tension because, I mean, you walked into an arcade back in the day when an allowance was maybe $5, and that was what, 20 token, or wait, 25 tokens. Mm-hmm. No, 20 tokens. I can't count. Can't do multiplication. And I mean, that once you were done, you were done. I remember my mom always said that. So I didn't have that same feeling. But with that, I kind of felt like I won the lottery too, a little bit. So it was really weird. It was a really kind of strange, you know, juxtaposition of emotions at that point.
It was also really strange just to keep hitting the start button and not put any quarters in.
Like, yeah, I mean,
everything was free play. So,
like, you imagine that when that happened, and I've used this kind of a situation before, where when you were a kid, you imagine how great life would be if all you could eat was cupcakes. You didn't have to pop and cupcakes, and then once you get that freedom as an adult, you don't do it. And we could eat cupcakes every single day. I've said this, and just there, it was like, I can play games the whole time. I'll never die. I'll never run out of tokens. And it just, it's almost kind of bittersweet because you've made it to that point. You're an adult and you have these freedoms that as a kid you could rule the world with.
Cole, what was the first game that jumped out at you?
Well, the pinball machines were what jumped out at me. I didn't really have a lot of experience with the different pinball machines growing up. I mean, I know I played some of them. I just can't remember exactly what the titles were. And just listening to other podcasts and other people talk about pinball machines, like, got me excited to see what they were talking about. And I know you jumped on Twilight Zone, and
yep.
I never played it, but I was just so in awe of it. Like, I thought the art was so cool, and then just the whole game itself was pretty neat. And then I got into Black Knight 2000, and I realized I'd suck at pinball. And that game was pretty cool. And just like all the other ones that they had there, that they had like all the major pinball,
well,
machines, I guess, that we have heard other people talk about anyway.
What stood out about, like, what do you think made Black Knight 2000? Just as I know, that's one of those almost infamous machines as far as supposed to be one of the best ones out there.
I mean, I got a lot of shitty balls when I played. Like, it was just dropping behind my flippers, but and I don't really know the history of pinball machines, but it had an upper level flipper, and I thought that was really cool.
Okay.
It was hard to kind of acclimate myself to it. But yeah, once I did get it, it was really neat to have that. It was just on the right side. There's only one flipper on the right side on the upper level. So I thought that was cool that it was multi-level.
Cool. Yeah, I didn't get to play Black Knight because it started, when we got there initially, the lines were kind of shorter. And when we came back later to play, those popular ones we noticed that were open early were no longer open. But I don't remember much about the Twilight Zone pinball machine other than I was really excited to play it. Like, it was a name I recognized, but when I stepped up to play it, I looked over to my right and notice that the Demolition Man pinball machine was right next to me, and the controls for that, the buttons for the flippers on that are actually like, you know, gun handles. So it's more of like a trigger system. So the entire time I'm playing Twilight Zone, and I don't mean to disrespect Twilight Zone because it was a pretty good table, but I was waiting to play Demolition Man. I was like, there's a guy kind of sitting next, almost on top of the machine next to me, and I was like, as soon as he moves, I'm playing that. And, I mean, Demolition Man that's the game that really stood out for the rest of the day for me, just because, you know, I make a lot of Demolition Man references on our shows. But I kept thinking to myself, I was like, you know, if there is ever one thing that I wouldn't be embarrassed to own about from Demolition Man, even compared to owning the movie, it would be the pinball machine. Seems like this is it's a great pinball machine. And if I ever needed something Demolition Man in my home, that would be the one to go to. But
it had really great artwork on it too.
Yeah, I mean it's a good table.
Conversation piece. I was thinking the whole time I saw it. Well, it was really awkward actually. I happened to walk up on you just while you're playing the Twilight Zone, and your eyes were on the Demolition Man. I kind of felt like maybe you were with a lady, you were staring at another lady's butt, and Twilight Zone was like, stare at my butt. Why don't you stare at my butt anymore? And Demolition Man just shaking it, just saying, look at me. I'm different. I'm shiny, you know?
I guess Rod Sterling can hold a candle to Sylvester Stallone.
No, I was making eye contact with Simon Phoenix.
Okay.
It figures, yeah.
But that one, the feature that stood out to me was, higher up on the table, there was a third flipper that I didn't figure out was up there until I think my third ball. So, I could have played that one. I could have played that one for hours. So, but the last big table, after we found out, too much to my dismay, that the Judge Dredd table was not working as far as free play went, which, you know, how awesome would that be? 2012, going from the Demolition Man pinball table to the Judge Dredd pinball table. You know, I could. You know, that some people only dream about those moments. But then we found Pinbot. That was the other one. Like, that was one of basically I was looking for Demolition Man and Pinbot going into the day. So the fact that Pinbot actually existed, and that's when it kind of hit me, just that they had everything that you should look for at one of these expos. I mean, they had a really great representation of pinball machines, and Pinbot does a lot with having multiple levels, and also it was the first game I remember playing as a kid, and then it didn't hit me till I was well into my game that there's a game within pinball. Like if you hit certain combinations of buttons and rails and triggers, it will unlock other things on the table. And I remember as a kid, that was the first pinball game that I grasped that concept, that like, no, there's a strategy to this. You're not just hitting the ball every time it gets near your flipper. So I had a lot of fun with that machine. And so I would have been happy pretty much the rest of the day just playing those two tables, I think.
Was that from outward appearances, that pinball machine seems small compared to the other ones. Is that accurate?
I think so, but I think it's also a little bit older.
Right.
So, but yeah, it did feel a little bit smaller.
And then we got, you know, you and I played some Street Fighter 2 and some Mortal Kombat 2 just to, just to get the feel of the arcade again.
It seemed appropriate. I think and both matches, if I remember right, were relatively close. I know the Street Fighter match was, that was surprisingly, like, for us just kind of fooling around and, playing some Street Fighter, like, it was, I believe one of the matches I had no health left when I won.
Right, right.
So, did we do a Ken and Ryu battle?
Of course, because I think that's the only characters we know.
Classic. No Zangief?
No.
No luck for Zangief.
His 360 moves are too hard to pull off.
Well.
It was also original Street Fighter 2, and I think, you know, we're both used to. Our classic days were Street Fighter 2 Turbo on the SNES, so it seemed a little bit slower You know, we were still pulling off all the moves. And then when we jumped to Mortal Kombat 2, neither of us really knew the moves anymore on that one. And the button layout of an official Mortal MK machine that takes a little bit of time to.
So weird. I didn't remember it being like that. And I don't even know if I ever played on an official Mortal Kombat machine. I had to at time out, but
I don't know. I mean,
I just don't remember the block button being in the middle like that. It was like a five set up like on a die, so it's just super interesting.
Yeah. I don't remember going into arcades with those machines being available until, you know, well after the fact that we already knew we sucked at the games and I was too shy to want to play them in the arcades. Like, I just watched the big kids play these games.
Well, can I just add about your guys' Mortal Kombat match that it was a very anticlimactic match in the sense that I walked up just as it was at the very end and somebody won, I don't remember who, and Finish Him came up and it was like slow motion. I was like waiting for it. And then you just, he backed off.
I don't even think I hit another day,
and I was like, what are you doing? I was really sad about that. Didn't even go for the uppercut.
No, I was trying to, I froze. I was trying to think of what to do, and then it was already over.
Because they swept kicked him.
Did you play any other arcade games on your own, Cole?
I don't remember. I don't think I did.
I know towards the end I jumped back on Robotron, which, you know, I was playing all the dual joystick games apparently. But
so Ethan was playing some Jackrabbit or something. What was that game called?
I was like I don't know what it was, but I was like a chipmunk.
It was terrible.
Well, it was weird because it had a control that was like a flight stick, and I was like, what the hell? And I was like, all right, I'll do it. You know, it's close. And I was like a chipmunk. And I was scavenging things, and it was weird. I did really well in the first level, and the second level not so much. It was one of those games I feel like my mom would kind of push me to play, even though I'd be looking over at the Mortal Kombats and stuff like that. Cute game, fun game, but, you know, I don't know. I'm a bit mature for it,
Well, so when you kind of entered the convention center there, you walk right into kind of the pinball area on the left, and then right next to it are the arcade machines. But the second half of the convention center is basically every classic console that you can think of. And so what kind of stood out in that area or surprised you in the console area?
I was surprised to see the CDI there. Never seen one, never really paid attention to it. And of course they were playing the Zelda classic, Winds of Gamelon or something like that. So I did not sit down and play it because that game is supposed to be terrible.
You wouldn't pretend that it doesn't exist.
Right, but I did sit there and look at it for a little bit. And then another thing that stood out for me, and I don't think they had it there, but they just had a poster. I think somebody had probably taken the game in the system, but they had an awesome Mega Man 2 poster, poster that you can see in the Facebook photos.
I don't remember that artwork at all.
I don't think it was on the box art in America, because I think they actually put Mega Man, you know, like the first one had that crazy box art, and I think they put more of the short Mega Man on.
Yeah, they actually had a lot of kind of blown up box art posters, and it didn't look like they were for sale, but that was like, when we get to the vendor stuff later, that was the kind of stuff I wanted to buy. I wanted to buy that Mega Man 2 artwork. And
okay, I just looked it up, and they did have an interesting artwork for Mega Man 2. It was the tall, skinny kind of art. It wasn't like from the game, but it wasn't that one that we saw. I wonder if that was like just a European or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely hadn't seen it before. But that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
They also had a wall full of basically old personal computers and Apple IIe's and Commodore 64. And like, I think that wall kind of surprised me the most, just because I just kept thinking the upkeep on those machines to keep them going this long, and then to bring them into an expo where other people can play them. That was just, it was kind of cool to witness.
Well, people played it. I mean, people played everything here, which was the thing that, like, surprised me, because I figured we'd be walking, people would be playing pinball, people would be playing the arcade machines, and maybe some of the newer consoles, and then I was almost thinking it was going to be like a museum, and you just see these computers sitting there, and you look at them, you wouldn't touch, you'd look, but you wouldn't touch. There'd be laser beams or some type of alarm attached to it. Yeah. I imagine that. But I mean, people were sitting down. People were playing text adventures. People were playing, I mean, all kinds of just random old games. And it was cool. I mean, it felt really cool because it felt like everybody was giving everything a chance. And going into this, and I remember, you know, when speaking with Jeremy, I mean, Jeremy was strictly pinball, you know. Mm-hmm. And I looked around, and I mean, I think that we lump all of this together, and we kind of get, I think, sometimes upset when, you know, people lump gamers in this broad stereotype. But I kind of felt a little bit bad because I always felt like the arcade, the pinball, the old school PC players were all gamers, and they all kind of aged along with their systems, and they're playing, you know, modern day PC games and 360 games. But I got the impression after this event that people still played those old school games. I mean, that's what they primarily focused on, you know, because I mean, maybe people just never let go of those kind of things. Maybe people basically love what the Nintendo offered them, or love what a text adventure could offer them, but they don't like the games that are out now. And I never really wrapped my head around that concept. I thought it was all together. If you like games, you like games, but you know, apparently that's not the case.
Yeah. And it never hit me as, it's not that they disliked the current games. It's just like they never had a reason to move on. They had everything they love right there. I mean, you could walk up and play a Virtual Boy.
Yeah. Oh, you could. I just want to – and we kind of joked about it. But, I mean, oh, my God. Like, that system, it I mean, it looked cool. Don't get me wrong. It looked cool. But, man, I can't believe they – I can't believe that got past product testing. Like, I can't wrap my head around that. You know, like, there was very little at that expo that just was kind of appalling to me. But the Virtual Boy, I just kept thinking, like, it's cool to see it. And I think everybody there was like, it's a Virtual Boy. It's kind of a, you know, kind of infamous in the gaming community. Look at it. And I was the guy that went up and was like, oh, I want to play it. And, like, just regretted it immediately afterwards.
So I'm trying to think, Cole, I think we noticed an original Famicom. Was that?
Oh, yeah, it was the Japanese Famicom. And it was a lot smaller than I expected. Because, you know, the NES was this big gray and black box for the U.S. And then I don't know if that was a redesign or what. But I don't think it was, because I remember seeing a picture of it, and it was top loading. So it was a top loading Famicom, and it was red, like a burgundy and cream color. So it was like totally different than what we had here. And it was just interesting. And the controllers were similar, but different colors again. And I just wonder why they changed it up so much for the US market. Because obviously they could house it in a lot smaller device than the Nintendo.
But obviously it worked out for them too.
Well, yeah, it did. But at the same time, it's like, I bet they had a lot more hardware issues with the slot loading and pressing it down than just top loading ones.
Sure. I was surprised at the range of consoles. Like, I knew they had a console area set up, but I'm like, oh, it's going to be, you know, a few Ataris, the classic Nintendo systems, the Sega systems, but I also, you know, forgot they had, like, the Saturn and the Dreamcast. And,
did you see a Jaguar there?
No.
I didn't see one either.
I didn't see a Jaguar either, but
I got excited. I thought you saw one.
Oh, yeah. No, the Dreamcast, that brought back really good memories, because I was a huge Dreamcast fan. I still think I kind of am. It was kind of a sad story in terms of how I, you know, lost my Dreamcast. I literally lost it. And looking at that, I don't know, I almost had to look away. You know, it was almost like seeing the one that got away, you know. And it was really sad. It was really sad. Didn't even want to play it. Someone off said, hey, man, you look like maybe you'd be interested in playing the Dreamcast. I was like, no, I'm fine. And I just walked off. It was really rude, and I apologized to the person that, you know, asked me to play that game with them. But, you know, emotions run deep.
Well, before we get on too much of a downer note, let's bump it back up with talking a little bit about the people, the guests that were at this event, because there's one story that keeps standing out to me. And Cole, it was, I think one of your friends was telling us the tale, because I didn't witness it at first. I saw it later. But, you know, I kind of mentioned the fact that families were kind of a big part of this event, which I thought was really neat. But I think she was telling the story of there was a dad walking around carrying basically a step stool and following his little 5-year-old kid around. And every time the kid found a game that he wanted to play, he'd set the step stool down so he could stand up and, you know, play the arcade machine at the right level. And it's just, I don't know, there was just something really kind of heartwarming about that moment. And, you know, as much fun as we had, that's kind of more of why these expos exist, not for, you know, us just taking our nostalgic trips with our buddies. I mean that's part of it too, but I get a kick out of seeing the next generation exposed to that, especially arcades in general, because they're not around anymore.
Right. That's what I liked about it. There were a lot of younger children there, just playing everything they could get their hands on. Like you guys mentioned the Donkey Kong girl, and how she got upset playing it. And I think it was the same girl that was playing with her friend Castlevania Symphony of the Night earlier. Mm-hmm. So I got a real big kick out of that, because there's these two girls walking up to the PlayStation. Symphony of the Night is my favorite game. And I was just like, yes, this is the next generation is going to be okay, because they're playing Castlevania. But they had this really cool setup where they had a really nasty looking chair with a wood TV and a bunch of like VHS, like old VCRs and stereo equipment with a bunch of old magazines. And it was, you know, it was an old tube TV that they had an NES hooked up to. And so I a number of times as I walked by, I saw like, it looked like families sitting there and playing, or one guy was playing and the other ones were watching. And it just kind of took me back to when I was a child and I never let my sister play and she always had to watch me. So I thought that was pretty cool too.
Even the fact that most of the people were sitting in front of the chair, not on the chair.
Yeah, they weren't even sitting on the chair.
Just like sitting cross-legged on the ground, on the floor waiting their turn. And it was
that's what we did too.
Yeah. My parents still have a TV like that, and it just I was like, I need to make sure we hold on to that thing.
Well, I think that it was cool to, you know, you had talked, Justin, about there weren't a whole lot of video game type conventions going on, or almost now after leaving this, it was almost this whole idea of kind of geek conventions, quote unquote, and you know, we've got Gen Con up here in Indianapolis and a few kind of smaller things, but Louisville's got a lot. In that area, you know, between Louisville and Nashville, I mean, it was cool to meet some people that were kind of running, you know, some comic book conventions. We talked with the guys from Derby City Comic Con, mm-hmm. and the people from the Geek Media Expo. And I mean, it was cool because, I mean, it was just a really cool atmosphere, and it was really fun. And I mean, they all said that all of these demographics aren't the same, but they're interrelated based on the passion that people have, mm-hmm. you know, and that was kind of cool to see people that were quote unquote, you know, kind of normal run of the mill guys and girls, but they were really, really passionate about, you know, their favorite pastime, their favorite hobby. And it wasn't like you went into this. And I think a lot of people, when they think of these conventions, they think of a bunch of, you know, asocial individuals sitting around not talking to anybody. But I mean, that wasn't it at all. Like, it was just, there was a lot of good, solid energy there. And everybody was promoting this kind of intense geeking out. I've never heard geeking out before. Maybe it's because, you know, but that's a really good way to describe it. I mean, and that's, I think, what we all were doing at this point. And when we were talking to these people, it was like, this guy's geeking out as I'm talking to him. I'm geeking out. Someone behind me is geeking out. This little kid's geek. I mean, it was cool. And that was like the whole theme of it, is just people were just really, really pumped. And everybody was really friendly, and everybody wanted to talk. Everybody wanted to talk about, you know, what they were there to do. But they also wanted to brag on the Arcade Expo.
Yeah.
I mean, that expo's got a really great reputation. I mean, they had nothing but great things to say about the organizers, you know, and how just passionate those guys were and how they put a lot of time and effort into it and how it looks like the expo is just going to continue to grow. And that was a cool thing, you know, coming from it, because you think, you know, there's going to come a time where, or you hope that there never comes a time where people lose interest in those kind of niche kind of things. And it looks to me like expos like this are going strong. People want something different. You know, people want to kind of look. And I mean, kind of looking at it, we talked about the whole games art and kind of the history of games. And this in and of itself, I almost saw it as one of those, you know, this is our way of going back and looking at the history and exposing more people to that history. And I think that's cool because that, again, gives gaming that much more legitimacy in terms of being accepted as a not that I need it to be accepted as a mainstream medium, but it has that respect that I think it deserves because it is an unbelievable form of entertainment and one that has a really deep and rich history. And we got to relive that, you know, this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, definitely sounded from Jeremy that the Louisville Arcade Expo itself is just growing each and every year. And it sounds like they've really kind of secured some funding for the next step up for the next couple of years. So, you know, I really advise keeping an eye on it if you're in the Midwest, as you know, a growing expo and just a really positive experience that I feel is worth witnessing and taking part in. But beyond that, we also talked to I think it was it Jared the Duck Hunt?
Yeah, oh Jared. Yeah, Jared. We stumbled across Jared out in the hallway, and I mean, he had just won the Duck Hunt Championship, and you know. I guess in my idealistic world, he was going to be just pumped and excited and just, yeah, I did it. You know, like he worked really hard for it. He was a real casual dude. You know, he was like, yeah, I won. Great. And it's funny. And once we, you know, we post the video of the event, his whole family comes walking up and it's just, it's hilarious because it's almost like they're excited. They're having a good time, but it just, you know, kind of poking fun at the whole idea of winning a Duck Hunt Championship. And I mean, this guy never played Duck Hunt before this. So I kind of thought about the sad Duck Hunt player that had been practicing for the past couple of years, you know, to win that and losing it to Jared, who was, you know, relatively indifferent to it, I would say. It was kind of a humorous thought.
We also ran into a couple of celebrity game characters.
Yes, Waluigi, Princess. And you know, we talked to Waluigi and his friends and family.
Well, Waluigi has a girlfriend.
Yeah, he and does. If I went back and looked in the pictures, she dressed up like Peach later on. Oh. And I was like, wait a second.
We talked to a different Peaches. Peach.
Yeah, we talked to Coffee Peach. Yeah. But yeah, it was just really cool to see, and then Mario, Luigi, and they were the game or the whole event. Like they helped out with the event, and were kind of
yeah, they were running the
helped tournament. Out Jeremy to organize. Yeah, and they the girl I work with, who you know got me hooked on this whole thing. She dressed up like Link later on, and they had a costume contest later in the night, and she got second.
Oh, cool!
But the guy she was with, like, she really won because Mario basically gave it to his friend. I forget what she said he was dressed up like, but they had a guy dressed up like a Minecraft character.
Creepers, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Well, no, it was the main guy. He was the miner, yeah. And I can't remember what. Yeah. And there was a guy dressed up like Pac-Man. So, I mean, there was a few costumes, but they were like the ones that we saw were pretty well done. There wasn't any really half-assed ones. So it was interesting to talk to those celebrities, and they had a good sense of humor about us interviewing them.
Yeah, I mean, Princess Peach was actually helping out with the event itself, and she was, you know, really professional and talked to us in character. So that was fun. But Waluigi was actually just a random expo attendee, and he had a good time as well, and his friends. So we appreciate them not being scared of Ethan and giving us some conversation. And then also there's a big vendor area as well that surprised me. One just at the range of merchandise that they were actually selling at the event, and you got to talk to David Lugo?
David Lugo. Yep. Yeah, David Lugo was a pixel artist, and what he did was he actually used the special beads I kind of forget what they're called now, like, but
purling beads.
Purling beads. There you go. And he created, you know, kind of iconic scenes from video games. And it was cool because he had a few models that he'd done, which they kind of stood up, and they were kind of pieces that you could put on your desk. But then there was also a few kind of scenes from games that he would kind of put together almost like a picture. And I actually picked up one from Secret of Mana, and it's really well done. Those beads lend themselves to pixel art. And the coolest thing about David was, you know, he was really down to earth, but he was, again, like, passion. I mean, there's another theme about this expo. He was really passionate about this. He kind of stumbled upon this art form, and he wasn't even comfortable with calling himself an artist at first. I mean, yeah. If you see this guy's work, it's pretty amazing. I mean, he does a really good job. And it was really cool to talk to him and just talk to him about how he got into it. And you know, he kind of pointed out that the guys that organized it at Louisville Arcade Expo just really pushed to have those kind of unique vendors come, because it would have been very easy, I think, to have a GameStop come in and do something like that, something along those lines. But they went for kind of the grassroots, kind of the local art scene, and that was cool. I appreciate it because, again, it was comfortable. You never felt like there was any part of the fest or the expo that was kind of
nothing was exploitative.
Franchised out, you know,
or exploitative. Like,
exactly.
Everything was just really genuine, and I didn't expect that. And hats off to the organizers for finding these people and bringing them out, because I mean, I know they're out there, but finding, you know, outlets and means of reaching an audience to that you can continue to create this type of artwork, it can't be easy in the Midwest. And so I was just impressed with the kind of breadth of things available and the kind of the art behind them. And but also in these kind of vendor areas, this is where it got a little bit dangerous for me. So they had a couple different setups for basically selling all the classic games and classic consoles. And I had a moment, and luckily Josh Lee was by his phone, because I was consulting with him on my purchase. But I went back to one of the classic game salesmen, and there was a second generation Super Nintendo for sale that I almost impulse bought on the spot, but found out a little bit more about it. But I was kind of saddened to realize after talking with the guy that they had the second generation NES also available before that, and that was the machine that I really wanted to get. But I started thinking through, like, yeah, these are pretty unique machines. You don't see them around very much, but, you know, opening the door back into retro game collecting, that would be a slippery slope,
dangerous path.
Were you guys tempted at all by anything?
Oh, the whole case that they had, the same guy who had the Super Nintendo, that had a big, like, glass case in front, and it was like every Japanese RPG that I love and I've played just sitting there just calling at me. It's like, you need to buy me. Like, I mean, I got rid of – I had all the Final Fantasies up until a couple, like, on the PlayStation up until, like, 3 or 4 years ago where I sold them, but some of the more rare Japanese RPGs, like, they had Chrono Trigger, they had Earthbound, and like the old, like, big box with the strategy guide packed in, and just a lot of, even up to the PlayStation 2. So, like, a Suikoden 4, we got a lot of game time out of that, especially our friend Justin Carr. I don't know, it was just kind of like, it just kind of brought all these memories back of when I used to play those games, and my there was money in my pocket and it was burning.
There's also some Japanese retro titles as well, like just some imports that, you know, I saw, you know, Mother 1 or Mother, it was either Mother 1 or Mother 2, the Earthbound prequels, just kind of hanging out, and I was like, I really want this stuff, but I'm not ready to jump down.
Yeah, I was gonna say I wasn't too scared about going into the retro gaming collection, because I kind of like having my nice, neat, organized little Steam queue. But I think the things that I was kind of starting to kind of move towards, and Justin, you eventually picked one of them up, was kind of some of the action figures and some of that art type stuff, you know, because I'm trying to fill my man cave up more so with more decoration. Right now it's pretty bland, and you know, I got my Secret of Mana little pixel art poster from David Lugo, but you know, I saw some of these action figures, and those are the kind of items that I could spend a lot of money on, and I'm pretty good at keeping myself from doing that. But I mean, the longer I would have been there, I think the more prone I would have been to picking that kind of stuff up. More souvenirs.
I actually made out pretty well in this scenario, that I got representations of two of my favorite video game characters of all time, because from David Lugo's setup, he had a nice stand-up Simon Belmont, which is kind of cool. You bought the Secret of Mana thing that basically was flat on some Secret of Mana poster or photo with his artwork on top of it, which is a good combo, and he had some really nice Zelda, Legend of Zelda pieces on there. And earlier, he had a stand-up Samus from Super Metroid that was really, really colorful, and I thought I was going to get that, but I missed my opportunity. So I picked up Simon, and then we were walking out, and I was talking myself out of that Super Nintendo, and for about the same price, I noticed a Mega Man plastic kit. And so these, I'm not really familiar with this stuff, but it reminded me of the, basically it's like the plastic models I used to make as a kid with, you know, cars where you're popping out the pieces and sticking them together. But these don't have any glue, but apparently like this is kind of, you know, bigger in Japan with kind of Gundam models. But they had Mega Man characters. And so I went to purchase the plastic Mega Man, and they asked me, you know, would you like the kit, or would you like the pre-made Mega Man, which is more money because you're paying them for labor. But I ended up buying the kit, and about 2.5 hours of work later, Mega Man's watching his podcast right now. So I'm pretty happy with that one. That's one of my more prized video game collectibles at the moment. To kind of wrap this up, let's look back at the Arcade Expo as far as like who would you advise give an Arcade Expo a shot?
I mean, I think that anybody that I would almost say anybody, because I feel like there was something for everybody there. I think there was enough to do, enough to kind of look into, even if you're not a gamer, even if you're someone that doesn't like games. I mean, I imagine my wife would have had fun here. I mean, she really doesn't like video games.
Yeah, I was curious about that.
I think it would have been cool to just it, because if you look at it not just as going to play games, but look at it as kind of the history, it's almost a museum, you know, almost a interactive museum that you can go and check out. That in and of itself is worth anybody going to check out. But I think definitely if you grew up on arcade games, you'll love it. You'll have a great time. It'll be really comfortable.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking the same thing as far as it's welcoming enough and unassuming enough that there's nothing intimidating about it for newcomers or non-gamers. And yeah, if you look at it more as a museum experience, that might kind of let their guard down. And I mean, a lot of people our age at least have roots or recognize some of these games that I think they'd be surprised at how much fun they could actually have at something like this. And Cole, any thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, I know my friend that was there, he was really excited to play some of the games, and he was a gamer, and his girlfriend came with him, and she, you know, she really doesn't have any interest in games, but she was having a blast. And I ran into him a couple of different times, and they're talking about the high scores that they got on the machines, and hopefully they would stay throughout the whole time. But I know they're having a lot of time, and they're having a good time. And I just think anybody could enjoy themselves, whether, you know, you're into gaming or not into gaming. But there's the pinball machines, you know, I've never run into anybody who said that they hate pinball. So I think there's something for everybody. And even if you're not into game, there was the vendor room. There's a bunch of cool stuff in there. There were other people like drawing, like hand drawing anything you requested. So I thought that was really neat. And I think anybody could go.
Any advice for newcomers as far as like how to, you know, maybe what to expect or how to plan out your day? Because we, you know, we initially got there and kind of got the lay of the land before kind of making our plan. But I know, you know, some people, you know, going to these expos, if you don't have that much time, or like you're only going for a day, unless you kind of the day can move very, very quickly. So
yeah
I was gonna say, any advice I would give is, I mean, I went into it thinking, oh, it'll be cool for one day and then we'll be, you know, we'll have enough of it. But realistically, you could go for the whole weekend and still have a lot of fun, because they did a really good job of, you know, having all kinds of activities. They had concerts. Mm-hmm. They had a costume contest. I kind of felt like, you know,
they even had seminars too.
Yeah, seminars as well. And I mean, we spent a lot of time there, but I mean, we spent a lot of time there talking to people, and not even, I mean, if we would have invested, you know, equal amounts of time into playing games, I mean, we would have been entertained the whole time. And I think that don't go and think, oh, I'm going to just rush right through everything. You could spend 2 days there and plan on spending 2 to 3 days there if you can at all, because, you know, you can take your breaks in between. But I mean, there's just so much stuff to look at. And I kind of regret us not having more time, you know, and I think mm-hmm. that you should plan accordingly.
Well, that's the thing that I really enjoyed talking to all those people. And I think, like, there's not a lot of places you could go where everybody is, you know, really into gaming. So you have a lot of like-minded individuals there, and, you know, pick their brain about what their favorite games are. And they might give you an idea of, like, something that you never played before. Like, oh, you should play this arcade game. So I just think that's something that anybody like looking to go to an expo like this should look forward to and try to do, and not just focus on, I'm going to try to play these games and get out. Cause I think, like you guys said, spending a lot of time there, you can discover new things that you never thought you would.
Sure. Yeah. The one thing I kind of made note of mentally would be that, you know, it does get a little bit more crowded as the day goes on. So as far as
get there early.
I mean, I think it opened at 10. But you know, one of my favorite parts about gamer culture is how kind of relaxed we all are, and nobody was like breaking down the doors at 10, so there was plenty of room to move around the entire day. But the lines were definitely shorter for arcade machines at the earlier portion of the day. So
and nobody was like a douchebag either,
no.
Like being pushy or like, get off the machine, you've been on there for so long. Like, everybody was really cool. So don't go in expecting a lot of dude bros.
And yeah, pay attention to, I mean, I think our kind of shared regret is just all the other events that were going on throughout. Like, we didn't get to participate or witness or watch any of the tournaments that were going on. And they had, you know, they had a nice variety from, you know, the pinball stuff to Duck Hunt to
pole position.
Yeah, it was, so there was definitely a variety. And it also wasn't, they weren't the type of tournaments where, you know, I mean, the guy, Jared, who won the Duck Hunt Championship, didn't own an NES. He wasn't, you know, pretending to be the world champion of Duck Hunt that has been training for this all his life. It was, you know, average gamers just trying things out, and it was very relaxed, and, you know, kids were getting to play. It was pretty neat. And
The Mortal Kombat 2 tournament was pretty intense, though, from what I hear.
Yeah.
there were some good players. Yeah.
And then also the costume contest at the end, because, you know, I consider us some pretty relaxed guys, but I don't know, the people that dress up for an event like this, they're really getting into the spirit, and I think that's pretty neat that they got to have fun with that. So yeah, we'll keep you updated as far as next year's plan for the Arcade Expo, and we'd be fools not to attend again. So we'll definitely keep you posted if we're headed down there. But
well, and then we might look at the Geek Media Expo too in Nashville. That's in late October.
Yep.
We might be thinking about going down there. So
and I know there are different arcade communities around the country, and it's kind of why I don't want to focus this just on our Louisville experience, but I know there are other expos out there like this, and I just fully endorse everyone getting to go experience one of these. So that's kind of why we were talking about it today.
Yep.
To kind of wrap this show up, horriblenight.com updates. The Horrible Night Out featuring the Extreme Enough game challenges is this Friday at NetHeads at 8 p.m. We made the game announcements earlier this week. But we're going to try to keep it as relaxed as we can. You know, there'll be prizes for the winners of each of the three games, but we'll keep the competition kind of relaxed and kind of encourage everyone in the Indianapolis area to come out and just play games with their friends and meet some new gamers from from around the city, and really looking forward to that. And then again, we spent a majority of our time at the Louisville Arcade Expo filming interviews and just kind of filming our experience at the expo. And we are making a push to get you more video content soon, and a variety of video content. I know Ethan and Josh have been hard at work playing games for your video enjoyment. So I'm hoping that in April, or no, I'm hoping by April that we start to get a kind of a flood, a light flood of video content for you. But especially expect to see Arcade Expo interviews and highlight reels in the near future. So that's going to do it for tonight, gentlemen. Thanks for joining me. The Horrible Show actually will be back in 2 weeks on March 20th for a live show centered around our monthly theme of Gamecation. So be on the lookout for that. We will be on Twitch.tv/Horrible Night starting probably around 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Our other Horrible Night podcast will be going on in the meantime. So thanks for joining us tonight, and we will see you next time.